that they finish of the purport. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyana Gyana Shalakaya Chaksurumilitanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam
Dadati Swapadantikam
Vandeham Shri Guru
Vandeham Shri Guru
Shri Uttapara Kamalam
Shri Uttapara Kamalam
Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha
Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha
Shri Rupam Sajjajatam
Shri Rupam Sajjajatam
Sahagana
Sahagana
Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam
Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam
Sadvaitam Savadutam
Sadvaitam Savadutam
Parijana Sahitam
Parijana Sahitam
Krishna Chaitanya Devam
Krishna Chaitanya Devam
Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan
Shri Radha
Krishna
Bhagavan Sahagana
Sahagana
Lalita
Lalita Shri
Vishakhan
Vitangscha
Shri Vishakhan Vitangscha
Panchakalpa Chubhyascha
Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha
Kripa Sindhu
Vyevacha Kripa Sindhu
Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo
Patitanam Pavanebhyo
Vaishnavebhyo Namaha
Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.
So, those who are serious about liberation are non-envious. So the Bhagavatam in chapter 2, verse 2, right? What does it say? And what does that mean? Yeah. And it's translated pure in heart. Then they can understand Bhagavatam, otherwise one cannot understand it. Very important verse, and then it also says what need is there of any other scripture?
There's a need of any other scripture. As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within the heart.
Yes. So it's very important. Envy is. Prabhupada said the spiritual world is based on love. The mature world is based on envy. Envy is such a thing as sort of, envy can be transcendental in competition, but mundane envy usually means that one wants to eliminate the person he's envious of. Ultimately then envious of Krishna, because everything comes from Krishna. So if I'm envious of you because you're very beautiful or very rich or very intelligent or very powerful or anything, then I'm really envious of Krishna, because those are his qualities. And the envy comes from lust, the Bhagavatam, the seventh canon response, because if I'm lusty for what you have, then I'll be envious if you have it, right? Or anybody who has it. So envy is, generally it's considered bad, you know. I mean, I mean, when I was young, they used to say you turn green with envy, and, right? But you turn green when you're envious people, you know, it means, you know, you get sick, you know. It's a sick condition. But it's being promoted, right, by advertising. Saw one ad in one of these magazines that's, you know, just advertising very expensive men's clothes. On the back cover it said, if you wear these clothes, everyone will be envious of you. In other words, you'll be God. So, but why would you want, when people are envious of you, they're practically cursing you. You know, because they don't like you. They're just wanting you not to have what either not exists, or they want what you have. You know, they'll kill you to get it or something. But that's the idea that, you know, everyone will know that you're rich and you look very beautiful, and they'll be envious. But non-envious people can understand Krishna. They can understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, we can't understand it. So that's what blocks us, for the most part. This envy is there. It's part of the false ego. As much as we can give it up and be happy that, you know, to see others happy, and see others making advancement, something like, you know, envy. If we see others making advancement or doing really nice service, and then we think, well, I want to do that, and take it that they're inspiring me, that's good. It's not exactly envy, it's something like that. But the envious would be to say, well, I'll have to blaspheme that person and convince everybody that he's really bad and I'm really good. And, right, like politics or like people do. Now, what are the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods? Because I thought, like, the demigods are very beautiful, right? At least, you know, Indra and those demigods.
You know, Prabhupada in the purport mentions specifically the horrible forms.
Yeah.
And even some beautiful forms. Mahakali, Shani, Chandika.
Yeah, different manifestations of Durga. Are very ghastly looking. Many arms full of weapons and a garland of skulls. And, you know,
killing demons,
killing blood all over her axe, and surrounded by witches and hobgoblins. And that's one thing that makes it very hard for the Hindus to integrate with, like, so-called Christian society in America or something. If they come and see those, you know, they're worshipping this goddess. How can they understand that when they are, you know, already they're against idols? But that's rejected. That's not the worship. And then it's mentioned here, Shani. Shani is a Saturn or something.
He's a son of Sun God.
But it's Saturn.
Yeah, it's Saturn. Yeah.
Because I know one time we were on the Brajmandala Parikrama. And the place we spent one night, they were having a Shani festival.
Mm.
Oh, all night, you know. I can't remember the song anymore. But, you know, they had this song playing all night, so loud, nobody could sleep. And none of the devotees could sleep.
In Brajmandala?
Huh?
In Brajmandala?
Somewhere in Braj, yeah. They had this Shani festival. And they were worshipping Shani, and they're having a big feast. And there's a big Shani temple.
Actually, people are very frightened of Shani.
Yeah. So it must be something. Saturn is inauspicious.
No, no. It is inauspicious.
Saturn is inauspicious.
Very, very inauspicious.
And Jupiter is auspicious.
They pray to Shani that you please remain far away from me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
This one, they weren't praying like that. They were wanting something. I remembered the song for a long time because I heard it all night, you know, this simple sloka. So anyway, there's many demigods like that are inauspicious, and even the good ones, you know, that people worship, like Brahma, Shiva, Surya, they're usually in the mode of passion. They want material enjoyment. So in that way, it's ghastly for a devotee, this whole idea of, you know, that this is, you worship this person, you is for sense gratification. They don't want to think about that, even though it's, you know, a beautiful form or something. But so it's interesting. These verses, this chapter is like, you know, everything you need to know is here in this chapter, and very clearly, you know, everything we need to know about consciousness and basic, you know, understandings. And of course everything goes very deep. But so they worship the all blissful forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's the most beautiful and who's the source of all the demigods, whether they're ghastly and horrible. Because Durga is good, Durga is doing good, but most people worship Durga for sense gratification, for material advancement. although she's a devotee, like in Vrindavan, there's a Durga temple down by the Parikrama Trail, and she's called Vrindavanishwari. You know, it's beautiful though, with many arms sitting on the lion, and then she's called Vrindavanishwari. Because she's actually Radharani of the material world. Radharani is the Durga of the Goloka, the controller and the provider of everything. But most people worship wrongly Shiva. When Prabhupada, Giriraj Swami was preaching, I think it was Madras, first time anybody went there. So everybody kept telling him to go meet one man that was like the leader of all the Hindus, and he was a very fixed up Shaivite. And Giriraj wasn't able to, you know, when they debated, he always couldn't defeat him. So when Prabhupada came, he was very anxious to have Prabhupada meet this man. They talked, and then the man said something like, isn't it possible to worship Shiva, you know, for some reason, good reason? And Prabhupada said, yes, but nobody's doing that. Everybody's worshiping Shiva for material gain and power and in the material world, and then he agreed. That's true. So Prabhupada caught him. But we'll see in the villages in India, they have these Kali deities all the time, and sometimes they're not only horrible and ghastly, but then they're made in a very crude way. So, and if Western people see that, then there's no way they can understand. But Hinduism is Western. They tend to say there's, you know, they have, well, it's true, there's 33,000 demigods, but they tend to say gods, and that the Hindus worship cows and all those things. And they don't understand because they just go by what they see and then they interpret what they see. And also many Hindus are, in the name of Hinduism, there's many things going on that are not exactly Sanatan Dharma, not at least Vaishnava Dharma. And people get really bewildered, right? Like in Singapore and Malaysia, they have this Thai Pusan festival, they call it. So it's advertised like as the Hindu festival, and tourists come, and that's where everybody's, you know, putting all kinds of nails through their tongue and carrying these big heavy things on needles and walking on swords and, you know, yeah, and people think that's Hinduism, you know. They're in a trance and they, you know, they put their tongue is sticking out with a big thing through it, and big nails through here.
They're walking on coals.
Walking on coals and everything. So that is not Vaishnava Dharma. That is not the Vedic. You know, it's everything is there, but we're monotheistic. And although Krishna has many, many Krishna, then Vishnu. Krishna has many, many forms. Ramadi, Murtishu, Kalani, Amena, Kishkana. Ananta. Yeah, that's the other one. Ananta, Rupam. Right?
Advaita
Machutam, Ananta, Rupam. There's unlimited forms of Krishna. But these are the Vishnu forms, and they're all very beautiful and nice, and the devotees worship them for spiritual advancement. They worship them for liberation from material desires. They're not worshiping. Of course, some people pray to Krishna, pray to Vishnu, but usually the people that want material advancement, they'll go to some demigod because a demigod gives that, and they're thinking that's where to get it. But the demigod doesn't give anything without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. It says, Brahmanas worship the Vishnu Tattva is represented by the Shalagram Shila, and some of the higher castes also worship, our Vaishyas and Kshatriyas also worship the Vishnu Tattvas. Shalagram Shila is an interesting phenomenon also, right? How Krishna has so many forms like that. And there's no need in the Shalagram Shila. Like when we get the Murti, we make installation, call the Lord to come into that form. But the Shalagram Shila, there's no installation. It's Vishnu all the time. it's actually Krishna, but there's different Shalagram Shilas for all the different, you know, incarnations, and then, but they can always be worshipped as Krishna, because he's the source of all of Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. He's the source of all the incarnations, of all the different incarnations. That's something also that's misunderstood. Many, they always call Krishna the, what is the eighth avatar of Vishnu? Eighth. Because he comes into the material world through the agency of Narayan. But he's not, he is the creator, he is the origin of Narayan also. But he works that way because that's the way the material world is set up. So when Krishna comes and makes his appearance, all the other incarnations are present within his body. And then he sometimes acts like Vishnu, he kills demons. Acts like Narayan. But it's like not actually Krishna who's doing that. Krishna is, he's always absorbed in his Braja Leela and his dancing with the gopis and playing with his cowherd friends and, you know, chasing and playing with the cows. But he kills the demons. That's a mission that he combines. But that's actually Narayan doing that. But Narayan is a creative source. Krishna is the source of Narayan. That's stated in the Bhagavatam, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, and also in Nana Avatara Makaro Bhuvaneshi. Krishna Swayam, Samavat. That Krishna is the Swayam. That's what Lord Brahma is also saying in the Brahma Samhita. So that needs to be understood. Jiva Goswami analyzed the Bhagavatam. And he actually, the Krishna Sandarbha is all about that. There's many, many slokas even in Bhagavatam which would sound, if you read them separately, that Narayan is the source of everything, including Krishna. But he says that all of these, everything has to be understood in relation to this one, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swami. That's the essential understanding. So then he explains exactly how all that is by putting it all together, which is why we need to read and study and hear regularly so we get a full idea. And Prabhupada gives us the proper conclusion of having done that, but that we have to, you know, understand because our minds are crazy. So if we don't hear from properly the second canto is explaining, and when you hear Bhagavatam from the right source, in the right way, with faith and devotion. He was asking about faith, but you can look up if you look in the, you know, in the database. Just so many verses they say, but there's always that key there with faith and devotion, all the time, regularly, every day. Right? If someone is just chanting, like, you know, but they're very proud of themselves, or they're chanting professionally, or they're, you know, reciting Bhagavatam professionally. And just to get and getting paid for it and using that, then they're not going to get Krishna Prema. They're not going to get the topmost goal. They get something. We can pray to Krishna for material advancement. We may get it. But then, like you tell people, if you just pray for money, you do your service just for money, you'll get the money, but you won't get Krishna. You know, you get cheated, actually. Krishna says, I'm the gambling of cheats. So no one can trick Krishna. You can't. We want Krishna, we really want the topmost, you know, pure love for Krishna, constant engagement in Krishna's service, and we have to be asking for that. We have to be begging for that. So Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavodra Nirmat Saranam Satam, it kicks out from the very beginning materially motivated religion. We're not kicking out any particular, you know, religious tradition and teacher. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, you know, there's different acharyas, people have different saints, but we should understand they're worshiping the same God, but in a different way. And that if we see other people doing it in their way, that would enhance our own, you know, worship in our way. But what it does, Prabhupada, as one we see it many times in the DVD or the movies, he was being interviewed and he said, "I don't see any difference between the Christianity," because they always ask about that. "Why are you different?" And then he said, "But the followers, I don't think, are very good." And that's not only in Christianity, but in America, of course, that's what's prominent. But everywhere, people are going to the temple, the mosque, the synagogue, the church, for material motives. And many, many so-called Brahmanas are promoting it. The Nigerian church? That's how they all talk.
Oh, it's here in St. Paul.
Yeah, but the Nigerians, they're everywhere, but that's how they, all their churches are advertising, big signs. Come for, expect a miracle, you know. Come and, more than just, they like, of course, healing the sick, but now they, the more they promote, you'll get rich. Because people think if you're rich, then you can go to the doctor, you can get any kind of medicine, you don't have to get a miracle. The miracle is to get rich and be happy. So that's very far out in the name of Jesus, because Jesus preached, you know, complete poverty and renunciation, really extreme. But this is Kali Yuga. And even in Japan, in Buddhism, they preach, you know, Buddha, they worship Buddha to get rich. Mostly people like Hindus that want to get rich, then they worship Shiva. Sometimes they're afraid of Krishna. They don't even want a picture of Krishna in their house, right? Because
yeah.
They think Krishna devotees get poor. Krishna takes a hari, you know, he takes away everything.
And even if they want to worship Krishna, they will either worship in the Srinathji form, Srinathji form, or in the Balaji form.
Yeah.
But they will not worship, you know, makes it.
Of course, many do. But it's just foolish to approach the Supreme Lord and just ask for material benefits. That's the Vedic, that's the Bhagavatam very strongly. Again and again, just smashes the whole idea of, you know, making an endeavor for material advancement. Whereas the Vedas, the flowery words of the Vedas, are telling us, you know, which drug you to do to get rich, which drug you to do to get many women chasing you around, which drug you to do to go to this heaven, to that heaven, to stay for so long. So that is, you know, Krishna says, beware of these flowery words, misleading people. They chastise Vyasa for misleading people. They want to enjoy anyway, and now you're giving them instructions how to enjoy even better. So that's not good. That's why you're not happy. So we are, you know, this message is not instantly received by everybody, but there are many, many people who are ready. They're looking for the truth. They're looking for something, you know, they know that they're frustrated. We were talking Sunday night. Many people, but it's why it's asking the Bhagavatam after, I think, the fifth canto, and is talking about Kali, someplace where it describes Kali Yuga, then it says, why would Krishna make something so bad as Kali Yuga? That's the question that's that Parikshit Maharaj asked. You know why? Well, the answer is there in the Bhagavatam. Is it because people are very stupid? Anyone who's still taking birth in Kali Yuga is very stupid. You know, they haven't learned their lesson. So it has to be really bad. Then, you know, now when we talk about when things are really bad, people, oh yeah, right. You know. But they still might be saying, well, it's okay in my house, you know. So my town didn't get bombed or flooded or tornadoed, you know. But it's, they realize that things are really bad. So some people, you know, then they can understand that they can't enjoy this material world. So it's actually a blessing, Kali Yuga also, because in Kali Yuga, Asti Eka Mahad Gunan, right? What's that?
Kirtana Deva Krishna.
Yeah, what does that mean?
We were chanting Hare Krishna.
then? Yeah, only kirtanadi, just by chanting Hare. So in other ages, many other things are required. You know, opulent, perfect deity worship, severe tapasya.
Great yagyas.
Yeah, great big yagyas. Nobody can do in Kali. We can do a little bit of each of those things. But simply by chanting, one can achieve the highest spirits by the name of Krishna. So. And then this is another nice sentence. Highly qualified brahmanas situated in the mode of goodness have no grudges against the mode of worship of others. That's explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in a very, very nice way in that book, Chaitanya Shikshamrita. He talks about, you know, how we should look at other religions and, you know, other modes of worship open-mindedly. But then he says also you should never tolerate someone who's completely deviant. You know, that's preaching on, you know, Aveda and Adharma and all that. Then we shouldn't say, well, that's okay, that's there. That's Kali Yuga, right?
What should we do in that case?
Well, you have to preach the truth, and, you know, if someone is sincerely inquiring, you know, some people are just bewildered by what they've heard from all these crazy people, so then those people we can, they'll listen. But mostly, you know, we have to give them books, and then we have to try to hope that they'll read them, which is, some do. You know, even amongst all the devotees that are initiated, we know many, many have all the books in their house, but they don't read them very often. And I saw the Christian advertisement, Bible on DVD, you know, and they have some expert narrator reading the Bible, and then you can click onto all kinds of pictures and dramas, and they said, oh, now all the kids like to study the Bible, you know. So, you know, we need things like that also. In Kali Yuga, many people, they can hardly read, even they went to school, but, you know, they never read a book, or if they did, they just read it, pass the test, forget about it, you know, and they get all their information from something else. So they have respect for the demigods, even though they may look ghastly, like Kali, Bhairava, and Mahakali, because they know they're servants of the Lord under different conditions. Yet they reject worship of both horrible and attractive features of the demigods and concentrate only on the forms of Vishnu because they want liberation. The demigods, even up to Lord Brahma, cannot offer liberation. Shiva can, as a guru, if we worship Shiva as a guru, and, you know, you can give Krishna. But I don't know if anybody does it now, in this day and age. But many people worship Lord Shiva. The Rudra Sampradaya. That's intact, so I don't know exactly. You know, what, huh? Yeah, that's it. Huh?
Vallabhacharya Sampradaya is Rudra Sampradaya. Vallabhacharya is Rudra Sampradaya.
No. Vishnu Swami.
Yeah, but I think Vallabhacharya comes in the
line. Reconnected with that one?
Nimbarkacharya.
Nimbarka, yeah. So I'm not sure exactly what, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of variety amongst the people that belong to them. Yeah, if you just go around India, I mean, so many people will say that, especially South India. Although they have, you know, also many people worship Balaji, Tirupati, and Rangaji. It's not everybody, but those people somehow put out more books, and when Nityananda Prabhu was traveling in South India and he heard the Shaivites and the Vaishnavas arguing, he just laughed. But the Buddhist, he kicked him in the head. Hiranyakasipu tried to get, but Brahma said, I can't give you this, you know, freedom from death. Because they're all annihilated at the time of death, also at the time of the annihilation. So we reject worship of the demigods. Krishna says, you know, Kamai Staista Ritigana Prabhajante Anyadevata. But those whose minds are bewildered by lust, they worship the demigods. They want something material. So better in the second canto is a very nice section there where it lists all the different demigods and what kind of benediction you get from them. Right? Yeah. Kamais, Indram India, Kamais to, that's the one I can remember because Prabhupada gave such a heavy lecture on that one. If you want sense gratification, you worship Indra. Because Indra is the biggest sense gratifier among the demigods. He's got all the apsaras. He's the most addicted to sex. So if you want that, then you worship Indra. And then Prabhupada gave such a heavy lecture. He said, unfortunately, many of my disciples are more interested in this object than they are Krishna. And it was really graphic. You can find it sometime. So it's recorded. But it, you know, if you want money, you worship treasurer of the demigod.
Kuvera.
You want the good health, you worship the horizon, the sun in the horizon or something, and the earth combined, and you know, many, many things are there. How to get these particular material benefits from different demigods. Then you have to worship the demigods. To get anything from the demigod, you have to worship them exactly properly.
Isn't it better to worship Krishna even if one has material desires?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You just said it. You know the verse?
No,
it's in this, well, maybe he's saying that also, but in the second, right at the end of all that long list. What is it? Loud. He's been reading a lot of Bhagavatam. Yeah, well, that's Bhagavatam.
No, not Bhagavatam. Just normal, sense of self-realization.
Oh, then he's quoting all those verses, yeah. So that one is a major one. Akama, sarvakama va. If you have no lust, or you have all lust. Moksha kama, even if you want liberation. If you have good intelligence, tivrena bhakti yogina. Tivra, what does that mean?
Full zeal.
Very strong. Tivrena Bhakti Yogina. That Tivrena Bhakti is in a few places. Kapila Dev also mentions Tivra Bhakti. Very strong, intense, focused. Tivrena Bhakti Yogina. Yajeta Purushampara. That if one has good intelligence, then he'll just worship the Supreme Personality of God, no matter what. Then, if we do that, then the lusty, stupid desires will go away. Because we get Krishna and then understand that these things are not very important. Some get the wrong idea that if I worship Krishna, I'll get all these things that I want. And then they come in the movement and they work very hard for a little while. But they're actually thinking, I'm going to get rich, I'm going to get this girl, I'm going to get that. And when they don't get it, they think, well, it doesn't work. Others may come, you know, kama, krodha, you know, you can come and, what's that, Brahma Samhita, right towards the end. You can approach Krishna with...
Krodha, kama, saraja, pranayani, bhiti, atsalya, moham,
right. You can approach Krishna with lust and all these different things. And you can, you know, but then you, if you really want Krishna, then all those things become insignificant. But if someone is thinking, well, this is what I want and I'm going to get it from Krishna, and they don't change, they don't try to purify their heart and, you know, take to the process fully, then that's why so many people, they're not getting, they want something material and they're not getting it. Krishna is more like they take everything away. You know, if you're lucky, you know.
Do they get some pious credit?
Of course, they get more than pious credit for whatever chanting and whatever service they did, even if it's not pure, there's still benefit. And that's the idea, that you keep approaching Krishna, and even if you get your material desire, you may think, okay, now I don't need Krishna anymore. That's usually what happens. Yeah, now I've got it together. Now I know how to go out in the world and enjoy. I failed before, but, you know.
Sometimes they might even think that it is my endeavor.
They'll also think like that. So, but then they'll remember again, oh yeah, I prayed to Krishna and I got what I wanted, and I'll pray to Krishna again, and eventually come to realize it's Krishna that you need. And you know, we've all been going through that for many lifetimes. To come to this point of sitting down and studying Srimad Bhagavatam and, you know, worshiping the deity and chanting regularly, that's not, you know, a cheap thing. It's very, very rare. Look how many people in the world, you know. Even though we do, you know, now there's a festival coming up in Russia in a couple of days, 3,000 devotees gather. Yeah, every year they have that. And in Ukraine they have, so, and in Mayapur we get maybe 5 or 10,000 devotees come. But that's a small number, you know, for the population of the world, for even the population of Minneapolis. Some of these preachers get 10,000 people every Sunday. And that's in live, and then they're on TV also,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, Texas 130,000.
And the football team also gets 30,000, and rock musicians, and